美国之音现在继续播送中文节目。
首先请听国际新闻。
各位听众，今天是3月9日，现在是北京时间下午6点，华盛顿时间上午5点。在这个小时的简要新闻，美国驻中国大使布兰斯塔德表示，美中贸易协议不会很快达成，而且双方也没有像先前预期的那样就两国元首3月底峰会展开筹备工作。有分析认为，在美国总统特朗普与朝鲜领导人金正恩河内峰会破局后，美中双方对贸易协议都更为谨慎。布兰斯塔德还表示，华为最近起诉美国政府看上去是中方对美国的报复措施。布兰斯塔德星期五接受《华尔街日报》专访时说，特朗普与中国国家主席习近平的峰会日期还没有确定，相关的筹备工作也没有展开。在此之前，美国媒体曾经广泛报道说，习近平很有可能在结束对意大利和法国访问后，在3月27日和28日赴佛罗里达海湖庄园与特朗普举行峰会，并最后敲定美中贸易协议，结束已经持续将近1年的美中贸易战。中国政府一位高级官员表示，对美中贸易谈判的前景感到有希望，但任何实施机制必须是双向的、公平的、平等的。中国商务部副部长兼国际贸易谈判副代表王受文在全国人大星期六的记者会上说，美中经贸团队现在正在夜以继日的沟通，争取达成一个互利双赢的协议，符合美国的利益，符合中国的利益，符合世界的利益。美中之间的贸易战，在美国总统特朗普和中国国家主席习近平去年12月的阿根廷峰会后转入休战期，但双方仍然没有就美国提出的产业补贴、强迫技术转让、市场准入以及保护知识产权和网络盗窃、商业机密等问题达成协议。意大利总理星期五表示，中国的一带一路计划可能是对意大利的好消息。意大利总理孔特有关一带一路计划的标题与早些时候意大利副外长的立场大不相同。意大利副外长皮基星期三表示，当前意大利不应当与中国签订一带一路的初步协议。孔特总理星期五说，3月晚些时候，中国国家主席习近平到意大利访问时，他可能与习近平签署这项协议。习近平定于3月22日至24日对意大利进行国事访问。美国认为，中国的这个基础设施项目不太可能会帮助意大利的发展。美国一直劝说其他国家不要参与有可能支持中国外交政策目标的“一带一路”倡议。白宫官员此前表示，一带一路计划是中国提出为中国服务的倡议。美国智库布鲁金斯发表报告称，中国的实际经济规模比官方数据显示的有可能低12%左右，这加剧了外界的担忧，即中国的经济放缓速度可能比政府承认的更为严重。这份报告称，从2008年到2016年，中国的经济增速每年被夸大大约两个百分点。如果按照这一估算，这意味着中国2018年实际的 GDP, 也就是国内生产总值，比官方公布的90万亿元人民币低 10.8 万亿元人民币。上述的新研究显示，中国的经济放缓速度恐怕难以止步。去年中国经济增速放缓至 6.6%, 创下近30年来中国官方统计数字的最低增速。纽约时报报道说，中国的国营媒体中央电视台召回了美国分台的负责人以及十几名员工，这可能与美国对这个机构的审查有关。纽约时报星期五援引两名不要求透露身份的知情人士的话报道说，隶属于中国中央电视台的国际电视台美国分台宣布，台长马静、他的一名副手和十几名中国员工将返回中国。所有的员工对这个突然的变动感到意外。各位听众，您刚才收听的是美国之音的国际新闻。
以下为您重播美国之音 VOA 卫视焦点对话节目。
各位观众朋友晚上好，我是宁馨，欢迎收看美国之音 VOA 卫视3月8号的焦点对话节目。美中两国1979年建交被认为是20世纪最重大的历史事件之一。在两国建交40年之际，美国之音中文部制作了纪录片《栉风沐雨40年美中关系回顾与展望》，回顾两国关系40年来的风雨历程。那么今天的焦点对话节目呢，我们就为您播出此片。
请留意过万重山，
Here is the President of the United States.
Good evening. I would like to read a joint communique which is being simultaneously issued in Peking at this very moment by the leaders of the People's Republic of China. A joint communique on the establishment of diplomatic relations between the United States of America and the People's Republic of China, January 1st, 1979. The United States of America and the People's Republic of China.Have agreed to recognize each other and to establish diplomatic relations as of January 1st, 1979. The United States. 1979
年美中建交或许是现代历史上最重要的一次地缘政治事件。自1972年2月美国总统尼克松访华以来，华盛顿与北京的关系逐渐缓和，直到1979年1月1日两国政府正式建立全面外交关系。学者普遍认为，正是应对苏联这个共同的威胁，才使得美中这两个对手走到一起。
We wanted to show that despite the Vietnam War we could act diplomatically on the world stage in a dramatic fashion, that we could open up with a quarter of the world's people. We could get the Soviet Union's attention because they were having border clashes and tensions with China, and we thought if we open up with China the Soviet Union would be more willing to work with us.
1969年中国与苏联爆发边界冲突，直接把中苏交恶推向高潮。到1970年代中期，中国四面被敌视国家包围，在毛泽东的眼中，前盟主苏联已成头号敌人，正在怂恿周边邻国对中国实施战略包围。
And so China wanted to have the far barbarian, namely us, help balance them off against the near barbarian, the polar bear to its north, and therefore it desired to have an opening with us, just like we wanted to have better relations with both of these countries.
美中为应对共同敌人的权宜之计而建立起的关系，今天已经发展成21世纪国际政治中一对最重要而且最为复杂的双边关系。而与此同时，美中贸易纠纷和地缘政治之争使得美中长期合作的愿景似乎变得遥不可及。
America had hoped that economic liberalization would bring China into a greater partnership with us and with the worldInstead, China has chosen economic aggression, which has in turn emboldened its growing military.
The United States lost over 3 million manufacturing jobs, nearly a quarter of all steel jobs, and 60,000 factories after China joined the WTO. And we have racked up $13 trillion in trade deficits.Over the last two decades.
今天的美中关系是否正处在又一个转折点上？美中关系的基础是否已经改变？还是人们对美中关系的共识发生了转变？1979年美中建交时制定的目标是否已永远无法实现？
This time, the deterioration of the relationship has not been caused by an incident. It's systemic and it's structural.It's the result of, not just affecting, but it's the result of many sectors of the American society becoming alienated by China.
1978年7月，美中开始就正式建立外交关系，在北京秘密谈判。当时双方最大的分歧在于台湾。北京坚持要求华盛顿切断与在台湾的中华民国政府长期的外交和军事联系。 蒋介石领导的中华民国政府在1949年国共内战被毛泽东领导的共产党打败后退守台湾。
The big altercation was about what to do with Taiwan, because after Nixon went to China in 1972 and had the so-called Shanghai Communique, which declared there was just one China, he refused to say which China, and we continued to say that Taiwan was the only China, and President Ford did the same thing. So I was determined to change that.
We indicated that we were prepared to break relations.End the security treaty. The question was, how do we end the security treaty? We insisted that we end the treaty on the basis that was in the treaty. And this involved giving a year's notice to the government of the Republic of China that we were going to withdraw from the mutual defense treaty. We also said we would take our military forces out. But the question was how to handle arms sales. And we had language thatFrom our understanding of the meaning of the words that we used, indicated clearly that we intended to continue arms sales.
在艰苦的谈判以后，美中两国政府在美国时间1978年12月15日发表联合公报，宣布双方于1979年1月1日建立外交关系。美国同意结束与台湾的正式外交关系，但与台湾保持非官方的关系。美中正式建交几个月后，卡特总统签署了《台湾关系法》。
My deputy secretary of state went over to Taiwan, and he was physically attacked, on the street by irate, Taiwanese. But, I think the Taiwan Act that we got through the House and Senate of the United States successfully protected the interests of Taiwan and protected the interests of the United States.
So the Chinese made major concessions when we opened up, and indeed even when normalization took place under President Carter in 1979, that they tolerated an unofficial American relationship with Taiwan, which has got all the trappings of a regular relationship, economic, security, political, and which up until 79, we maintained troops in Taiwan and a defense, treaty,And we still have the Taiwan Relations Act, governing our relationship. So China's had to compromise in a sensitive issue while maintaining its principles. For the U.S., it was painful to have to switch relations from our good friend and ally in Taiwan, but we had to move somewhat in order, to move, the opening forward with China. And that's why we came up with a One China principle, which has always been vaguely stated. It meets the Chinese principle that there is only one China. We acknowledge that, but we don't spell out precisely what we think that means.
It was a few minutes before noon, and everyone had the feeling of being lucky spectators at an unforgettable moment in U.S.-China relations, and they wanted a souvenir, a last picture of the U.S. liaison office emblem that had been on display here for 6 years. Across the street, a few hundred Chinese looked on.Their reactions ranging from simple curiosity to an awareness that something very important was taking place. Inside the compound, Treasury Secretary Blumenthal met with a group of American business representatives, all of them hoping to get a slice of what they say is a vast new market among China's 1 billion population. The symbols of change then took place, a new embassy emblem replacing the old emblem.Followed by the unveiling of a brass plaque telling the world that this was now the embassy of the United States.
1979年1月29日，美中实现关系正常化后仅几个星期，邓小平便率团访美。在华盛顿，邓小平对美国总统卡特说：“中国准备出兵攻打越南。”当时中越反目成仇，而越南刚刚与苏联缔结了苏越友好合作条约。在邓小平访美后不久，中国出动10多万军队从广西和云南两省共三个方向对越南发起攻势。这场短暂而血腥的边境战争暴露了中国军队武器装备的落后。正如美国国务卿基辛格在他《论中国》一书中写到的，这场战争开启了中国与美国在冷战期间最为密切的合作。 卡特政府，特别是国防和情报部门，看到了提升中国技术和军事能力的必要性。华盛顿同意向中国出售军用装备，包括车辆和侦察设备，但没有致命武器。1979年美中建交以后，双边关系进入一个快速发展期，这在一定程度上得益于卡特政府打下的基础。
The Carter administration believed that the two bureaucracies, the American and the Chinese bureaucracies, during the Cold War had a negative mission against the other. Each ministry and each government saw the other in adversarial terms and had programs aimed to counter the other. So the Carter administration wanted to turn those negative relations into positive relations, so that they had commonality. They could work together on science or on technology or on education, on law enforcement.On military affairs, whatever the issue was, trying to turn an adversarial bureaucratic relationship into a positive cooperative relationship. That was called bureaucratic engagement. Then there was a societal engagement to try and partner and pair together American states with Chinese provinces, American cities with Chinese cities, American universities with Chinese universities, different institutions in each society to build literally bridges of interaction.
追随卡特的脚步，美中关系在1980年代里根总统时期，也就是美苏冷战的最高潮，继续发展。1982年，双方签署了第三个联合公报，也就是817公报，这使得美中之间因美国对台湾军售而引发的紧张得到缓和。1984年1月，中国总理赵紫阳访美。三个月后，里根总统对中国进行了回访，他还在复旦大学发表了演讲。
We managed to greatly increase economic and cultural and scientific exchanges. We had cabinet level visits. We had all the armed services chiefs go back and forth. We greatly increased, still on a modest level compared to today, our interchange. Also, we were cooperating against the Soviet Union. We were actually selling arms to China, almost $1 billion in arms. Way back then, that's a lot of money. Unthinkable, of course, today and ever since.We had bases along the Soviet border, secret bases tracking Soviet missiles that we cooperated with the Chinese on. I visited those. We also cooperated with the Chinese in supplying weapons, to the resistance against the Soviet invasion in Afghanistan.
除了出售武器以外，美国还开始对华出口军民两用技术。双方签署了纺织品贸易协议和避免双重征税和防止偷漏税的协定。到里根总统1988年1月卸任之际，美中双边货物贸易额与他就任时相比翻了一番。中国对美出口占其全部400亿美元对外出口额的四分之一。1987年，美国快餐连锁店肯德基在北京开设了中国第一家分店，那段时期可以说是美中关系的黄金时期。
Furthermore, it was a golden age because China was at least debating and thinking about political reform. My wife in particular and I would host people in the embassy that were dissidents, reformers, together with government and party officials around the same table. And we did things then that were actually unthinkable today because the Chinese themselves were debating political reform.
1989年2月，美国总统老布什在就职后仅一个月就到访北京，他接受了中国官方中央电视台的采访，成为首位通过电视屏幕直接向中国民众讲话的美国元首。然而好景不长，美中关系在1989年6月4日发生的天安门事件后急转直下。中国当局6月3日晚和6月4日凌晨动用军队在北京天安门广场及附近地区血腥镇压了要求改革和民主的大学生和民众。美国政府、国会和民间舆论予以强烈谴责。
And we broke off everything but official relations for 6 years. 6 years. And there was a lot of opposition and hostility in American Congress, in the American government, the American society against China.
美国宣布了多项对华制裁措施，并对北京实施武器禁运。武器禁运一直持续到今天。 美国国会还通过法案，允许1989年6月4日至1990年4月11日之间抵达美国的中国公民获得永久居留权，俗称六四绿卡。
Sympathetic review of requests by Chinese students in the United States to extend their stay。
但曾任美国驻华联络处主任的老布什总统意识到稳住美中关系的重要性，他在天安门事件不久后便派他的国家安全事务顾问斯考克罗夫特秘密访问北京，与邓小平见面。
因为老布什是个资历非常深的一个外交官，他是早就意识到了这些，而且吃了不少批评。那个时候那个 Scowcroft 将军他到北京去他不是跟那个中国领导人就聚一杯酒吧然后那个中方是拍下来了，也出版了那个照片，在美国的影响力很大。这个也是为什么克林顿在竞选当中，就是1992年可以说那个老布什是跟北京的这些怎么说那个 Butchers of Beijing 就是屠杀学生的合作所以布什是付出了代价，可是长期来讲他也是保证我们的关系的稳定。
在1992年的美国总统大选当中，克林顿击败了老布什，他最初的对华政策是把贸易与中国的人权状况挂钩。
We continued in confrontation with China on the human rights issues, but the Clinton administration's overall posture was to want to move toward a more normal relationship.
We put forward modest suggestions we thought they could take, such as letting Red Cross visit prisoners and other issues like that that we felt were not regime threatening, but would show some signal in human rights. And we felt we had some leverage with the economic issues and trade relations where they wanted most favored nation.
1993年11月，时任中国国家主席江泽民在西雅图的 APEC 峰会上与美国总统克林顿举行了会晤。这是自1989年天安门事件以来美中元首首次会晤。次年3月，克林顿派国务卿克里斯托弗去北京，目的之一是考察让贸易与人权脱钩的条件是否已经成熟。克里斯托弗计划会见中国最知名的异议人士之一出狱几个月的魏京生，中方以魏京生要外出疗养为由阻挠了他与克里斯托弗的会面。
所以那天早晨江泽民下令把我给扣了，然后就到了十三陵那边一个招待所，当然是公安局的招待所，然后呢就来了一个自称是江泽民的代表来跟我谈判，就只有我们俩在那儿一边一杯一杯的对着喝酒一边是谈判。他主要的目的就是你能不能不见克里斯托弗。后来我说为什么不见，我比较喜欢套人家话啊，为什么不见，我凭什么不见，我答应人家我就得见。他说这个问题很严重。我说怎么个严重，他不得不说，他说你也知道党内斗得很激烈，有一派反对江泽民的人就说你要见了克里斯托弗，我们这个贸易和人权就脱不了钩了，所以说就说一定得把你抓起来。但是江泽民这派认为如果把你抓起来了，可能反而是贸易和人权脱不了钩了，这会成为一个很大的新闻。克里斯托弗想约见，最后你被抓起来了，那是很大的新闻。因为当时中美关系还是很敏感嘛，有点像碰一碰就要倒的那种状况。江泽民好不容易把这个慢慢的这个贸易各方面制裁、政治制裁慢慢给解除了，你现在又闹出这个事儿来，两边斗得很激烈，所以现在呢，就是不能让你见克里斯托弗。
不到一个月，魏京生再度入狱。但是中国后来释放了几名知名异议人士和人权活动者，
陈子明、刘刚和任婉丁。
与此同时，随着中国经济发展的加速，美国越来越认识到中国拥有巨大的市场和广大廉价劳动力。虽然克林顿总统依然保持对中国人权状况的批评，但他的政府已经在私下推动把中国的贸易最惠国待遇与人权脱钩。
President Clinton made the big mistake of undercutting his own policy. He got under pressure from business leaders, cabinet officials of an economic background, and other former government officials that this was a mistake, that we shouldn't link human rights and trade relations. And so he didn't support this policy. He basically went through the motions, and he didn't stop his cabinet officials from undercutting us at the State Department. They were trying to make progress. The Chinese could see the disarray in our government and that the president wasn't following through and the cabinet officials were undercutting it, and only the State Department was trying to press them on human rights. So they had no incentive to make any concessions.
I have decided to extend unconditional most favored nation trade status to China. Revoking MFN and, in effect, severing our economic ties to China would drive us back into a period of mutual isolation and recrimination that would harm America's interests, not advance them. Rather than strengthening China's respect for human rights, it would lessen our contact with the Chinese people. Rather than limiting the spread of weapons of mass destruction, it would limit the prospect for future cooperation in this area.
在贸易与人权议题脱钩以后，美中关系以经贸合作为压舱石的局面逐渐形成，两国经贸关系不断升温，美中关系在90年代的其余时期大体稳定，尽管期间发生了围绕台湾的两次危机。1997年10月，中国国家主席江泽民对美国进行国事访问，华盛顿与北京宣布致力于发展建设性战略伙伴关系。4年6月至7月，克林顿总统对中国进行了为期9天的访问。
That visit was remarkable because the Chinese side is very bold, and we had a press conference.That was televised live in China between President Jiang Zemin and President Clinton. And nowadays, Chinese side is always too nervous to have real press conferences. We only have 2 or 3 questions, you know, it's all very kind of scripted. But that was a very freewheeling press conference that went on, I think, almost an hour. It was very candid.And they allowed President Clinton, for the first time this had ever happened in China, he gave a speech at Beida, and it was televised live to the Chinese public. That showed a kind of confidence on the part of the leadership and Jiang Zemin, and I give China a lot of credit for that. And it had such a beneficial impact on U.S.-China relations, because President Clinton felt...also very optimistic, very positive about the relationship.
与此同时，美中两国的经贸关系越来越紧密。
今天是1997年的元旦，据我国对
到1997年，中国对美国出口总额达到了379.7亿美元，顺差210.1亿美元，占该年中国总贸易顺差404.2亿美元的一半以上。在美中贸易中，获益匪浅的美国工商界展开了强大的游说攻势，呼吁克林顿政府和国会支持中国加入世界贸易组织，并实现与中国的永久正常贸易关系。1999年，美中加紧了关于中国加入世贸组织的谈判，中国迫切希望结束与美国的谈判，并在年内完成入世。
Its negotiating efforts.Became more and more intense over time. I think what really happened is that China understood the kinds of reforms that it would take to get into the WTO would be good for the Chinese economy, good for growth, good for Chinese development, and therefore would increase the living standards of the Chinese people.
然而在临门一脚之际，克林顿政府迫于国会的压力，在4月份时任中国总理朱镕基访美时未能与中方签署入世协议。紧接着在5月份，北约对前南斯拉夫的空袭误炸了位于首都贝尔格莱德的中国大使馆，造成中方人员伤亡的不幸事件。中国各地爆发了反美示威，使得美中入世谈判一度停滞。
I think it would be inappropriate for me to be talking about on this particular day about Sino-U.S. relations. But I do think this, that when all of the emotion has drained out of this terrible tragedy, that then wiser heads in both China and the United States are going to realize that our two countries, the United States, the superpower economically and militarily in the world, and China, the most populous nation in the world, a rising power in this region, it's in our interest to try to build a constructive relationship.
最终，克林顿政府与中国11月15日在北京达成了中国入世的双边协议，但美国国会仍然要求足够理由去相信中国入世对美国是有好处的，才会批准给予中国永久正常贸易伙伴的地位。
实际上 PNTR 那场斗争呢，在国会确实是美国近代以来的最大的最严厉的一场斗争，很尖锐，双方观点很尖锐，而且没有一个议员敢说我不投票缺席，平常每一次投票都会有人缺席，唯独那次投票没有一个人缺席，也没有一个人弃权。你必须表明你的态度，因为共产党那边的压力也很大，白宫的压力也很大，那白宫最后到最后快投票前几天了，前一个星期，人家统计啊，我们这边还比他们那边票数多，克林顿急了。
当时美国贸易代表鲍尔舍夫斯基主导了美方与中方的入世谈判，在他看来，如果国会不能给予中国永久正常贸易伙伴地位，美国将失去来自中国的巨大商机。
As part of the deal for WTO membership, every country accords the acceding member most favored nation statusPermanent normal trade relations. And I think the human rights groups perhaps felt that designation should be withheld. But that's not possible to do and have the country join the WTO. What it could have meant was that the United States would have been excluded from the benefits of China's joining, but every other country would have.
克林顿政府试图说服国会让中国融入世界贸易体系，可以加速中国国内的政治和社会变革。
We definitely, in order to get the Congress to pass permanent normal trade relations with China, it's certainly the case that we oversold the politicalBenefit, the benefit of China joining the WTO for its own domestic political reform. We had to do that because Congress had this annual review of China's human rights treatment of its own people, and they, you know, felt very strongly as.By the way, the Clinton administration felt strongly about it too. But we did feel that we'd seen that China's reform and opening had led to gradual progress in expanding individual freedom inside China. So we anticipated that if China joined the WTO, we would see continued gradual improvement of China's human rights.situation, but we overdid it. We really made the case too strongly in order to get congressional support. But we would never have gotten PNTR if we hadn't done that.
最终，美国国会通过了2000年美中关系法，克林顿总统签署后生效。法案规定，在中国正式加入世贸组织后。美国将取消此前按1974年贸易法所实施的对华贸易年度审议，与中国建立永久正常贸易关系。
China was admitted to the WTO under the Bush administration. And it was, from the American perspective and the Bush administration's perspective, entry into the WTO was seen, to be a good thing for two reasons. Number one, it would help control the Chinese economy.In the global order. If China was outside the WTO, they're a rogue actor. China could disrupt the global economy. If it's inside the WTO, the institution can control some of China's more destabilizing behavior.
And the other element of the Bush strategy was that economics would affect politics. And if China marketized its economy, it would liberalize and maybe even democratize its political system. Now, that obviously hasn't happened, but that was one of the assumptions of the Bush administration.
That God is universal and God is love.
在中国入世后的三年里，美国从中国的进口增长了92%，出口增长了81%。象征着美国文化的可口可乐、摇滚乐和好莱坞电影，也走入了千千万万寻常中国百姓的生活。
可乐狂热爱好者
啊，是。
2005年，中国已经成为世界第三贸易大国，仅次于美国和德国，并在2012年跃居世界第一。但与之而来的是美国对华贸易赤字的猛增。2001年，美国对华贸易逆差为831亿美元，到2005年，对华贸易逆差飙升至2023亿美元。到小布什卸任总统之际，美国对华贸易逆差已增至2680亿美元。随着中国经济的飞速发展，华盛顿抱怨中国没有充分做出匹配其在国际社会中地位的贡献。在小布什政府担任过副国务卿的罗伯特·佐利克呼吁中国扮演负责任的利益攸关方的角色。
He made that statement in regard to China's contributions to global governance. And his criticism of China was that it was a free rider in the international system. It was the second major power in the world, but it was acting like the 50th power in the world. It wasn't contributing to public goods, international public goods, proportionate to its capabilities or its responsibilities. So Zelik was saying in his speech, look, China, you've benefited from getting into the international system. It's time to start paying back and being part of the community. The international system's a community. Everybody pays in. It's not a freebie.
中国对这一呼吁基本上无动于衷。在小布什总统任期的最后一年，中国邀请他去北京观看2008年北京奥运会的开幕式。北京奥运会结束后一个月，自1930年代大萧条以来最严重的金融危机爆发，并很快席卷西方主要工业化国家。当时，为了将全球金融危机的冲击最小化，时任中国总理温家宝领导的中国国务院出台了规模4万亿元人民币的刺激措施，其结果是中国不仅在全球金融危机下维持了经济的增长，而且增速还加快了。
So what you got inside China was a sense of premature triumphalism. China is got the answers, got all the answers, and leadership.And the public started demanding a more assertive Chinese foreign policy.
That's an element. I was living in Beijing that year in 2009-10. I was a visiting scholar at the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences, and I watched the Chinese reaction to the global financial crisis. There were two reactions. Reaction number one was that the American economy and American economic model was fallible. It had been held up as something to emulate.Ever since 1978 in the third plenum. Most Chinese thought, well, let's become like the United States. Well, Lehman Brothers crashed, the American economy near depression, and Chinese concluded that this is not such an infallible model. We don't necessarily want to be like the United States anymore. That's the first thing. The second part of it is the Chinese belief that they had their own economic model, the 中国模式, right?That state control of the economy, state-owned enterprises, and other dimensions of the Chinese economic model was not only successful for China, but was exportable. China could become the leader of the world economically. Other countries would follow China's model. So in 2009, there was a lot of what in English we call hubris in China. Not just the Chinese leadership, but Chinese intellectuals.I remember going to lots of meetings, and Chinese thought that the U.S. had finally crashed. The United States was, after years of predicting American decline, this had finally happened, and years of predicting China's rise, it had finally happened, and then those two trends were going to define the future. United States,
reserve, protect, and defend. 中国开始在全球范围内挑战美国的主导地位。奥巴马2009年就任美国总统时，他最初的对华策略是与中国深入接触，解决共同的全球问题，比如气候变化和朝鲜的核威胁。
农红，
Good afternoon.
但他的首次访华却被处处设限，他与中国民众以市民大会方式的直接交流，没有被官方的中央电视台现场直播，也没有在新闻联播中予以报道。奥巴马接受南方周末独家专访的报道遭到删节。2011年11月，奥巴马政府推出亚太再平衡政策，显示美国打算把外交政策重心转向亚太地区。奥巴马政府还宣布美国将与另外八个亚太国家展开下一代贸易协议跨太平洋合作伙伴关系 TPP 的谈判，而中国被排除在 TPP 之外，这引起了中国的反弹。
其实北京早也对华盛顿不满，我的意思是说，共产党早就定位美国是中国实现它的所有的目标的最大的障碍物，这是中方先做出的一个决定。
在有主权争议的南中国海，这里不仅是全球重要的地缘战略要冲，也拥有最繁忙的航道，还蕴藏着丰富的资源。中国从2013年开始对斯普拉特利群岛，也就是中国所说的南沙群岛中方控制的七个岛礁进行史上空前的填海造陆行动，同时还大规模扩充在帕拉塞尔群岛，也就是中国所说的西沙群岛的存在。同年，中国还在东中国海就尖阁诸岛，也就是中国所说的钓鱼岛，与日本爆发严重纠纷。
In the past 10 years, China has relied more and more on its offensive military capabilities to engage in coercion and threats against other countries. That shift to a more direct approach is what really woke the United States up to the nature of the threat.
2013年9月，在习近平就任中国国家主席并全面接掌中国党政军大权后仅几个月，他就提出了他标志性的“一带一路”倡议。中国将根据这一倡议，向新丝绸之路和海上丝绸之路沿线上亚非欧国家的大型基础设施项目提供贷款和资助。
我觉得最大的那个转折点就是改变了很多美国人的一些看法，有很多因素，可是我觉得最重要的还是南海问题，就是那个海牙那个裁定的那个裁定下来，中国不理他也否认他，这个是让很多美国人意识到中国是根本对国际法没有兴趣，对国际社会舆论也没有兴趣，对中国的那个太平洋这些邻国的一些看法和利益也没有太大的兴趣。
And in Chinese domestic politics, the Chinese Communist Party shifted from a more liberal direction than had been pursuing for the previous decade under the guidance of Zheng Qinhong.He retired in 2008, and for various bureaucratic reasons and individual reasons, the Chinese political system became much more conservative beginning in 2009. So we have seen since 2009 dramatically increased repression in China and control by the party, the state, the security services. That's one reason the U.S.-China relationship has deteriorated.If you're looking at the pattern of the last four decades of U.S.-China relations, there's one pattern that is very clear. When China is reforming internally, economic reform and political reform, then the United States is very happy to work with China. Then the U.S.-China relationship is very harmonious. It's going very well. When China is not reforming politically internally or economically internally, then the Americans don't have much to work with. We don't think that there's a lot of cooperation to be had.And for the last 8 years, China has not been reforming economically, and it certainly has not been reforming politically. In fact, it's been going backwards to the 1950s.
What's happened, and this is a big surprise to all of us who study China, is that Xi Jinping has made a big U-turn back to the more authoritarian features of Chinese politics. You know, the end of...peaceful leadership succession at the top, which is violates all the efforts that Deng Xiaoping made back in the 1980s. The party has swallowed up the government and is trying to run everything. And the party is also dominating society a lot more. It's a much more repressive system than it was a few years ago. So all of those domestic trends make China look a lot more threatening.
我们这已经在公安系统很多地方都在用了，特别在新疆，在和田，就这些地方。
And then you add to that some of the messages in the 19th Party Congress about the Chinese option, the Chinese system, and socialism with Chinese characteristics being superior model for the rest of the world. That's a declaration of a kind of worldwide ideological Cold War.
根据皮尤全球民调的数据，美国民众对中国的印象在2012年从正面转为负面，这种看法一直持续到今天。
After the end of the Cold War, the strategic rationale for the U.S.-China relationship disappeared, and the two countries came together to increasingly develop their interdependent economic ties. But the U.S. expectation was that China was going to adopt the global norms that were established after the Second World War, and there would be increasing convergence between the two systems, at least in the area of the rule of law. And I think what we've seen now is a perfect storm in Washington where not only policymakers, but also legislators and the business community are expressing their collective frustrations with China over the failure to do what the United States had expected it would do, protect intellectual property and conduct trade on a fair basis.
Were I China, I would seriously consider the implications when one of the world's most recognizable institutions has decided that it's too difficult to do business in China.
随着美中实力的差距越来越小，美国对华贸易逆差越来越大，越来越多的美国人日感焦虑。民调显示，现在只有38%的美国人对中国抱有好感，比2017年的44%下降了6个百分点。一些美国经济学家估计，在2001年至2015年间，美国因对华贸易流失了340万个工作岗位，其中近3/4为制造业工作岗位。特朗普2016年竞选美国总统时承诺，他要让就业回到美国，在贸易问题上对中国强硬起来。曾经担任他竞选顾问的史蒂夫·班农说，中国一直是特朗普关注的对象。
The one thing Trump was obsessed with and really understood was China. Of all the other stuff on public policy, he had a very loose grasp because he's a businessman. He's not a politician. He's not a policy guy. But China, he already had very definitive ideas on currency manipulation, on the trade deals.
Because we can't continue to allow China to rape our country, and that's what they're doing. It's the greatest theft in the history of the world.
It's very interesting that when I met Trump, he was probably actually more of a China hawk than I was.
在特朗普和他的一些核心幕僚看来，中国的不公平贸易行为以及美国大企业和华尔街大投行的贪婪是导致美国蓝领工人和中产阶级面临经济困境的主因。在特朗普总统任期的初期，班农是特朗普对华政策的一个重要推手。
We are clearly, I don't think there's any doubt, we're at economic war. China has been at economic war with us for 2 decades. We have now, for the first time, engaged in that economic war.
2017年12月，距离特朗普就任美国总统首次访华后仅几个星期，白宫在国家安全战略报告中将中国列为美国的战略竞争对手。一个月后，五角大楼发布的2018年国防战略报告把中国列为修正主义大国，其崛起对美国的繁荣和安全构成挑战。
The United States could not go on. The strategic economic dialogue was nothing but barbarian management. That's ridiculous. You're not going to manage Trump like that. You're not going to manage this new group of people that are starting to see what the Chinese regime has done for 20 years. So the old way was a sucker's game. And that was made basically by people who are incentivized, the Goldman Sachs crowd, the corporate crowd.
特朗普是很早几十年之前就开始敌视中国，说中国是美国最大的挑战，甚至是敌人啊！他一直是非常怀疑这些马维尼查问题，不是他做候选人的时候才开始的，对他来讲是根深蒂固的啊！再加上他又想班农啊、Navarro、Lighthizer 这些顾问啊，就觉得中国的所有的公司，不管是那个国企的还是私企的啊，都是占美国的便宜的。特朗普看起来这是他的根深蒂固的一个信仰。
2018年3月22日，特朗普在白宫签署一份备忘录，指责中国采取不公平贸易行为，并盗窃美国知识产权，为对价值600亿美元的中国商品加征惩罚性关税铺平道路。
We have a trade deficit, depending on the way you calculate, of $504 billion. Now, some people would say it's really $375 billion. Many different ways of looking at it, but any way you look at it, it is the largest deficit of any country in the history of our world. It's out of control.
在世界两个最大的经济体的关系走向低谷之际，整个世界都在关注它的后果。
I think we are effectively into a Cold War already of a certain nature. That isn't to say it couldn't get worse. It could get worse. It could get better. But in fact, we are in a rivalry position now for the first time in the last 40 years in the cultural domain, the educational domain, the economic domain, and the strategic military domain. In the last 40 years, we've always had one pillar of the relationship that's stronger than the others and kind of supporting a positive relationship. But now all of the three major pillars, economic, strategic, diplomatic, cultural, all of those are being attacked simultaneously, really in both countries.
I think in the short term, we're going to see increased tensions between the two sides. The United States has defined its national security as the need to maintain, you know, dominance in the region. And China's national security, they've defined it as the need to push the United States out of the region. As long as that's the case, it's going to be very difficult for the United States and China to have just a purely peaceful and cooperative relationship.
分析人士指出，美中关系未来将继续被矛盾和争端主导。
I think it's actually the new normal. This kind of competitive, stressed, complicated, fraught relationship. We're not going to get back to some kind of harmonious cooperation between the U.S. and China. If people think we're going to get back to some sort of harmonious cooperation, they're dreaming. We can cooperate on individual issues in which our two countries have a common interest. But I think going forward, the paradigm, the meta dynamic of the relationship is now friction, competition, stress.And the challenge is going to be managing that friction and that stress so that it doesn't become a fully adversarial relationship.
前四十年中美关系的特色是我们共同的期望大于我们共同的担忧。现在是相反的。现在我们各方都觉得对方是有阴谋的，有意图的。不信任的，而且是个全球的一个竞争。下一次在这些新的条件之下有危机的时候，而且这个或迟或早是会发生的，擦枪走火的事儿，有各种各样的可以发展这些危机的一些领域，那个时候我们会怎么处理，怎么管理这个危机，或者我们的下一个危机会不会变为一个像珍珠港，或者像911，或者像那个苏联发射那个 Sputnik 那个人造卫星，让全美国意识到中美关系现在是竞争关系，有没有可能就是陷入新的冷战？
I think in the long term, the American people will see that getting along well with China is a key to our own prosperity and our own peaceful life.In our own good life. And I think we have a temporary maybe setback under President Trump, but I can't predict what the next president will do, but I'll continue to use my influence and the influence of the Carter Center to see that we treat China with respect. We deal with their with problems with China in an open fashion and be honest with both sides. And I think the Chinese are very likely to do the same.
我觉得有时候啊，我们更多的是考虑两国之间的利益啊，或者对立啊，或者意识形态等等。但是我们忘了这个中美关系，实际上不仅是国家与国家的关系，而且是中美两国人民的关系。因为这个关系的我们未来的世界的和平和区域性的发展、经济的稳定等等。所以呢，不能只是政客、政治领导人啊才能够决定这个关系，而民间的很多良好的愿望，当美国的这个观众为姚明呼唤的时候，当中国的球迷给科比、给乔丹欢呼的时候，就告诉我们，这两国之间实际上并不存在着这种敌视，而更多的是互相的好感。
NBA is a very big game in China. 40年
变化莫测的美中关系，又走到了一个未知的十字路口。
I think we had all hoped before that an open China, a more pluralized China, would also be a place that would see its political system become more open and develop the institutions, not necessarily institutions modeled on the United States, because China has such an incredible political tradition on its own, but certainly a system that would accommodate a more pluralized society.
I don't see this current downturn as anything temporary, as I say. I think it's going to be indefinite. It's structural, it's deep. The world better get used to it. And China needs to look in the mirror and ask itself what it contributed to the deterioration of the relationship. This is not just the Americans who are causing the downturn. Americans are reacting to Chinese actions. So...Any relationship goes up or goes down, it takes both parties to contribute to it. And if it's going to improve or stabilize, it's going to take both parties to contribute to that. And I keep coming back to internal Chinese political reform and economic reform. If China were to go back to its more liberal economic and political reforms, then yes, the United States could work with China again. But on the path that Xi Jinping has put China on, there's nothing to work with.
China still has huge problems. Indeed, the United States has huge problems. I think we both should still stick with the Deng Xiaoping policy. Pacify the outside world and focus on our own problems. We both should have Tao Guangyang Wei as our policy. But that's an aspiration, not maybe a feasible hope.
We are now making it clear to China that after years of targeting our industries and stealing our intellectual property, the theft of American jobs and wealth has come to an end. Therefore, we recently imposed tariffs on $250 billion of Chinese goods, and now our Treasury is receiving billions and billions of dollars. But I don't blame China for taking advantage of us. I blame our leaders and representatives for allowing this travesty to happen. I have great respect for President Xi.And we are now working on a new trade deal with China. But it must include real structural change to end unfair trade practices, reduce our chronic trade deficit, and protect American jobs.